Ready?
Three, two, one.
It's Shazam!
The podcast that hopes to make itself obsolete.
I'm Kayla.
And I'm Carissa. And we have a very special guest on today's episode. And Kayla and I are both super stoked for you to hear it. So we're just going to do a quick intro at the beginning. And part of what we want to say is that this guest in particular, we ended up having a conversation that skewed in many directions. It's extremely inspirational. And she was very generous with her information. And we do end up talking about some triggering subjects. So this is another one of those episodes that are not for the babes. This is definitely an 18 plus episode. We do have a professional burlesque dancer on, so what'd you expect, guys?
Also, maybe just grab a tissue or seven, because it's going to be real intense. It's wonderful, and we're so excited. But yeah, definitely. Disclaimer.
We also decided to edit out some of the stuff that we talked about in this episode about the memes for magicians issue, because we ended up making a whole other episode about that anyway. But we just wanted to credit our guest today, who are being very coy about who it is, even though it's probably in the title of the freaking episode.
I forget that.
We just wanted to credit her, because it was the conversation that we had with her while recording this episode that really made us decide to start the memes for magicians movement. And in our next episode, which is coming out next week, we're going to be talking all about how that turned out and also some of the changes we've seen in the community since we started this podcast. So make sure you listen to this one and then listen to the next one as well, because we're going to be talking about a lot of different things. And before we continue, we also want to send a huge thank you to the International Brotherhood of Magicians, because as of right now, this podcast is funded in part through the support from the Endowment and Development Fund of the International Brotherhood of Magicians. And we're very, very grateful. It's hugely helpful. We've been running this podcast out of our own pocket. And now we have a little bit of money to pay Jeff, our editor, and cover some of the fees of the website. And we just could not be more grateful. So thank you to the IBM for seeing that this is valuable and reaching out and supporting us. We really appreciate it. And we're going to talk a lot more about what that means for the podcast in the next episode. But we did want to take the time to add this on and really thank them. And because we are super grateful, and it's made a big difference for us.
I mean, even just sort of emotionally, to have the support from, you know, like and just an international magic organization is really amazing. So we're very honored, very grateful, and even extra grateful for the guest that we have. So, Carissa, should we just get to it?
Yeah.
Enjoy.
Let's get to it. Enjoy the episode, you guys. We are so excited to have a guest on this week that I have been wanting to have on basically since episode one, because this is a person that I spoke to about the podcast before the podcast was even a podcast. And so I'm really excited. Kayla, did you know that our guest today has been working in burlesque since 2004 and made her debut at the age of 37?
What?
I know.
All right. Well, did you know that our guest was on radio for 10 years, XM Sirius, and 176 radio stations across the country?
Oh my goodness, that's insane. Kayla, did you know that the guest we have this week ran a weekly burlesque show called Monday Night Tease at the Three Clubs in LA? It ran for 14 and a half years, every single week, only missing four shows. And for 10 and a half years ago of that, she ran the whole thing.
Weekly?
Weekly.
Oh my goodness.
Ridiculous.
Did you know that our guest owned a day spa for 16 years?
What?
And was a licensed esthetician? This was before the burlesque,
that's
but
insane.
Wow.
It's insane. Kayla.
What?
Did you know that our guest today produces the Hollywood Burlesque Festival, an international competition for burlesque that is well-respected all around the world?
Okay, but did you know that her picture hangs at the Burlesque Hall of Fame?
Okay, but did you know that before that she was a licensed realtor?
Did you know that she's unapologetically the most outspoken, awesome feminist that we know?
Yes.
Guys, turn up your volume.
Woo! We have today the amazing Lily Von Stoop. Welcome onto the show.
Yay! That woman sounds awesome. Who is she?
I have no idea.
You told us what to say.
You did.
I did. You know, it's funny though, when you give your credits and then you hear them back and you're like, wow, that chick's cool. Yeah. I want to know that
chick. I want to go for coffee.
Because when you live it, it's just like, man, I've been fighting for every dime for so long. I'm self-employed. But that chick, man, she's awesome.
Because what's not in that credits is, I haven't slept in 3 days.
Yeah, that is very true, actually. I just got back from Las Vegas from doing the Las Vegas Burlesque Festival. I haven't slept in 3 days.
This is going to be so fun. This will be a Kayla and I have been talking a little bit about doing a drunk-isode, and this will be like almost that. Yes. Because everybody's tired.
Which
it's
means
perfect.
That's what we should be doing right after this.
Yes, done.
Should we just break open a bottle of champagne right now?
I mean, hey, if you got it.
I'll get the house boy to get on that.
We have to drive.
We have several roommates.
Oh, yeah.
I am so happy to be here. It's not even funny. So when we had Misty Knight on, we were talking a lot about how someone self-identifies. Do they identify as a magician? Do they identify as an assistant or a partner? Or kind of what is their relationship with magic? And you have lots of weird and fun kooky relationships with magic. How do you self-identify?
I identify as a magician.
Yes. All the yes. Yes.
Yeah, I do. I do prestidigitation and magic. That's what I do. You know, being in the burlesque world, we're allowed to play with taboos a little bit more. And so when I developed my character, Boobdini, I said, what can I do that makes me different, or what can I do? And I went, I know. Nature's pocketbook would be a lovely place to hide things.
Very nice.
And that literally, and I don't actually hide them there. I've got 3 pairs of panties on and some fishnets. I mean, it's all illusion, you know. But I thought, what can I do that would be different or interesting or bring something to magic that isn't currently there with women?
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, I've watched women in boxes. I've, you know, watched the partner teams. I've seen the solo magicians that are out there. And I was like, what can I do? And I went, you know, why not be a feminist magician in a way that brings things to the forefront that people usually find taboo with or uncomfortable with, and play with the sexuality of being with a woman and also the art of magic. So it kind of just kind of all fell together in a very weird mess that turned out awesome.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
I think kind of just going and transitionally off of that topic is that we talk a bunch about magic and sexuality and whether or not sexuality does even have a place within women who perform magic.
Obviously, why would it not?
Well, we totally agree.
That's the thing I don't understand.
Totally agree.
Everything has a place. It also has a time and a context. The stuff that I do at a burlesque show is stuff I would never do or attempt to do at a place like the Magic Castle.
Yes.
Well, first of all, they'd never invite me. But that's okay. It's a bit of a boys' club there, but women have their place too. But what I do isn't the kind of show that would be put on there. Unless they did a midnight show and an after hours kind of burlesque blue show.
Sure.
And then it's like I could pop in there and kill. But again, that place is a little bit different than standing in front of a bunch of people who bought tickets and know that people are going to be taking their clothes off on stage. So the stuff that I can get away with there is completely different than the stuff I can at, you know, a corporate event.
Yeah.
I do a couple tricks in my show. One is squeaky boobs, which is an old clown thing. So it's like, you know, I do a whole thing about how I dated a Ringling Brothers clown. I have natural breasts, and instead of, getting them lifted or that, I was like, what could I do that would be interesting and fun? So my surgeon put in squeakers, and I literally like, squeak, 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 squeak. After the show, people come up and they're like, do your boobs really squeak? And I'm like, really? Okay. And people ask to touch them, too, after the show sometimes. Sometimes they won't ask, and sometimes I have to have them removed from the event.
Not okay.
Again, and here's what I'll say about that. It's been a sexually charged night because there are people that are taking their clothes off. Beer is flowing. Liquor is flowing. Sometimes people forget boundaries.
Mm.
And that's different than someone who has no boundaries. But sometimes people will come up and they'll be like, and they'll like poke me in the boob to see if it squeaks. And I'll be like, why are you touching my boobs? And they're like, well, I wanted to catch you off guard to see if it would really work or if it's a trick. And so I'm like, okay, he didn't. That wasn't the intention of being like creepy. but you were creepy, sir. You realize that, right?
Yeah. They were accidentally creepy.
Accidentally creepy is a really good way to put it. Well, accidental sexual assault actually is how that's phrased.
Yeah, that's a real thing.
It's happened. I've had two people actually just, you know, and I have to go, hey, that's not really how boobs work. I don't know if you understand that, but I mean, I'm a magician, but I'm still a person. I'm a woman, but I'm still a person. I know some people don't believe that, but I am.
Yeah. On a, like, more not as terrible note is that, of course, as magicians, but I find it happens much more to me. I tell this to male counterparts and they don't have these stories, is that I'll be doing something will happen or get produced, and they'll all of a sudden just start grabbing my arms and touching me, and I'm like, oh, hey, no. Yeah. Because they're doing it in the context of, like, do you have anything?
Yes.
Forgetting that
you're a person.
Exactly.
Yeah. You're a person.
Yeah, unfortunately, your magic is with different parts of your body. They're like, it's the same
especially
story.
Especially for my act. Yeah. So there can be issues sometimes. Most of the time, it's really pretty good because part of what I work into all of my act is consent. Mm, you know, when I do that bit, I'm like, right now I'd like to offer one person in the audience to come up and be the hand of the audience. So I will sometimes bring somebody up on stage and I will say, with my consent, are you here with someone? And they'll be like, yeah, I'm here with my girlfriend. And I'll be like, oh, okay. Are you uncomfortable with this? And if she says yes in any way, shape, or form, I go, well, then we're going to pick somebody else. You know why? Because you guys have a relationship that's important. And this is part of a silly stage show. We don't have to go there. And I'll bring somebody else up. And, you know, it's like one hand, do it like this, da-da-da-da-da. And then again, it's all about the consent. It's all about the consent. And through the whole show, I'm like, all these women are taking their clothes off. Isn't that great? And they're doing it because they want to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cheer for them. Throw them money. This is a show. And remember, when you're on the street, that's not how you treat people. And so that's like a flow through the whole show as well.
Yeah. Today we were doing a photo shoot on the street, and we had three sets of gentlemen walk by. And out of the three, two were inappropriate and one set was not. And it was very interesting because all I could think is, we are doing a photo shoot for a feminist podcast, and right now, two out of three sets of people randomly, just, you know, not exactly a scientific survey, but it was one of those experiences where you just go, huh, well, interesting. So expressions like
those odds are low. Normally it's 3 out of 3.
We did have one.
Spent a lot of time in
gentleman,
LA.
I would say.
Yeah. He was very nice. He just turned to us and said, you look very pretty. And then kept walking. And it was oh, that's very kind of you. Thank you.
In the big picture of stuff, that's exactly what you should do. When people always say to me, things are so hard right now navigating being around a woman. And I'm like, treat them like your best friend.
Mm-hmm.
Would you grab your best friend's nether regions? Would you grab your mom's nether regions? Would you grab your sister's nether regions? Because we're just like that. We're people. That's all.
Yeah.
It's not complicated to be respectful.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that you work it into your art as well, because art has a job beyond being entertainment, being just like, fun, I'm distracted, I forgot my life is terrible. It's also, you know, an opportunity to communicate. It's a form of communication.
Yeah. And because I'm in the burlesque industry, we're dealing with body autonomy in a way that people really don't understand.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people say burlesque in and of itself is an act of rebellion or an act of revolution, because we get on stage and say, this is my body, this is how I'm presenting it, and if you would like to look at it, great. If you don't, there's another body coming up next, or you can go elsewhere if you prefer that. So, I mean, when women take their clothes off in an art form where they create the story, they create the costumes, they create the dance, they create everything about it, that's a very empowering thing.
Mm-hmm.
And burlesque is one of those art forms where there are no males keeping us out or making us feel stupid or not knowing how to change an industry.
Right.
Which I think is a lot of the problem that we have in the magic community.
Yeah. Well, and I think one of the things I love about, because I use burlesque as an environment to work on new material all the time. I feel very connected to the burlesque community back home. I've had a lot of wonderful opportunities, and I started out doing a lot of burlesque myself as a way of transitioning into doing like circus stuff in a safe space. Because what I loved about a burlesque room was that it was such a supportive, safe space. And I felt like, you know, I would almost get false reads on stuff sometimes because it was such a welcoming room that it would be like, oh, this won't play anywhere else. But one of the things I realized early on was what I liked about that space, if I really distilled it down, was that so many environments felt like they were about the male gaze, and a burlesque stage is always about the female gaze.
Not always. There are some shows that are still geared towards the strip club mentality, and there's nothing wrong with that. There really isn't. I mean, if you want to produce a show that has six women that all look like Rockettes in it, and it's upscale and lots of feathers and rhinestones and whatever, if you can sell tickets to that and people want to come, guess what? I'm going to show up and work if I'm asked to do that gig. I probably won't be because I'm 52 with long boobs and, you know, not a perfect shape anymore or a perfect body. So I've kind of aged out of that particular show. But the reality is Dixie Evans started the Burlesque Hall of Fame. Dixie Evans is a hero of mine. Yeah. And, you know, she was a 80-year-old stripper when she died. She stripped in the 40s and the 50s.
Yeah, born in 1926.
She went on to become a stripper, and part of what she talked about was you had two choices at that point. You could get married to the local drunk in town, or you could run away and hope to become a secretary. She goes, I started stripping. People looked down on me, but, you know, I drove a Cadillac, and I chose where and when I took my clothes off, and if people were exploiting me, I think I was exploiting them back. Mm. She goes, and there were some venues you'd go to, and you would walk down the runway, and you would look down, and it would be a row of men with newspapers on their lap, and you know what they're doing as you're walking by. And you'd go to the next venue where it was all couples, and it was a better environment as far as not feeling ooky.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I'm like, I strip, and if somebody doesn't go home and feel kind of good down there about what I did, I didn't really do my job because I am sexy, funny, and bawdy even at 52. So there's nothing wrong with me doing that. And as far as I'm concerned, if they go home and have to spend 5 minutes in their bathroom, I'm okay with that. I hope awesome. That wasn't too explicit.
No, it's perfect.
But the reality is, If you treat sexuality as something taboo and terrible, it will always be taboo and terrible, and those who experience life fully will always be put out of the main society. And burlesque has really come back to a main society art form again. You know, when you think about it, Sally Rand was at the World's Fair with a thing called the Nude Ranch. And it was all girls walking around with horses with things strategically over their shoulder to cover their naughty bits. She rode through the festival and opened it on a horse as Lady Godiva.
Wow.
You know, that was the World's Fair. You know, we used to have burlesque houses on Broadway with Ziegfeld Follies and off-Broadway with Minsky's. So the rich people had a place to go and the poor people had a place to go. Sexuality has always been a huge part of entertainment and society. Mm. It's just in the United States, they seem to think it's naughty if you do it if you're not married.
I think
or trying to have babies.
Yeah. Well, the arc of history is so long, and people have crazy historical amnesia. Like, we feel like,
oh yeah,
it's never been like this before, which for me was a big reason why I really wanted to have you on, is because Kayla and I are, you know, we have this in our notes, we want to talk about this. Kayla and I are baby feminists, and we're not trying to put ourselves down. We're just trying to be realistic about what our knowledge is and our understanding, because we've only experienced what we've experienced. And having access to more experience is valuable, because otherwise it's very easy to feel like, oh, everything's different now, it's never been like this before, when really life is about patterns and history has a lot of patterns. So we'd love to talk to you about what you've seen over the course of the last few years in burlesque, and even before that, what was the relationship that you noticed, like how has it evolved with this Me Too movement, and is this that different, or is it really just part of a wider trend?
It's part of the shift of society in general. Burlesque draws strong women and damaged women, sometimes the same woman, you know, because that doesn't kill us makes us stronger, as the kids say. So women that come into this art form are coming into it to reclaim their sexuality. They're coming into it to reclaim their space. You know, I have women that I have taught classes to and have gone on to strip that are doctors and lawyers and nannies and psychologists at children's centers. And they're like, if they ever found out I was doing this, I would probably lose my job. Mm. But if I stop doing this, I'm going to lose my mind. Mm. Because all day long, I'm in a button-up shirt listening to yes, sir, no, sir, or taking all of the stress of life and then being able to walk over and be free is one of the most amazing feelings there is, you know? So In the last few years, we've always been pretty inclusive in LA. I've been very lucky that from the time I started performing, we've had incredibly strong, talented people of color as performers, all sorts of sexuality as performers. It's been amazing to me because I'm not blind to it, but I don't have to seek it out as hard to make sure that I have a balanced show. Because, like, I'll do a burlesque show and I'll be like, oh, so-and-so is larger endowed. So-and-so is smaller. We've got some thicker girls. We've got women of color. We've got blondes. We've got brunettes. To me, that's like saying, come to my auto shop and find the car you love, whether it's a leather seat or a red cover or a whatever. Mm-hmm. So when you come to my show, you're going to fall in love with at least one of the performers is how I look at it. And if so-and-so is on stage and classic burlesque is not your style, or you're attracted to thicker girls, not skinnier girls, just wait 5 minutes and another performer's going to be up and maybe that's going to be your cup of tea. For me, the most amazing thing about running a show weekly was watching 25-year-old guys who have been raised on the internet with RedTube and what are the other ones? As I look at you, that's pretty funny. They've grown up with free porn where you could actually see an exam happen online. And they would come up after the show and they'd be like, I'd forgotten how amazing women are. Mm-hmm. Just as a whole thing. They're smart. They're beautiful. They're fantastic. I fell in love with that girl that did the comedy act, or I fell in love with the girl that did that slight fetishy act, or I fell in love with the, and I want to go home and I want to date again, you know? And it's like, that's the amazing thing. Or couples that would come to the show and would be like, this is dirty, but it's so clean, but it's also so cheeky that we're going to go home tonight and it's going to be awesome. And I'm like, yay! You know, we've done a great thing then because we entertained you and we kind of stimulated you in the same way. And so I guess for me, the changes have been other cities are now more inclusive. People are talking about, we have a troupe in such and such town. We're all white. How do we reach out to women of color and tell them they have a place on our stage? How do we reach into the LGBTQ community and say, hey, we want to work with you because diversity is great for all of us and it's great for people in general? Because, again, I don't want to go see the Rockettes one after another. Mm-hmm. As a team, fantastic. But a singular, gorgeous girl simply doing choreography is not enough entertainment for me. So watching how our communities have reached out and come together to make sure that people realize everyone's welcome. Because back in the 40s, you know, there were two circuits. There was the colored circuit and there was the white circuit.
Yeah.
And the two didn't work together very rarely. Josephine Baker, of course, crossed over in quite a few. There were the shake dancers and there were the burlesque dancers. And the two were not the same. And you had your hierarchy as well, because you had like Ziegfeld Follies, which was rich white people.
Yeah.
And Jewish. Fanny Bryce was in there. But then down to Minsky's and then down to the shake dancers. And that's terrible. It's terrible that they were separated that way. And now they're not. Well, there's still some areas, I'm sure, that are. But that, to me, is the greatest thing, is that people are coming together and making sure. We have festivals that do things like early application for people of color. Early application for disabilities, early application to encourage those people to get involved. Yeah. Because, again, not many people have enough strength to come take a seat at the table. But if you tell them there's always a seat at the table and you constantly reach out, they'll eventually come to the table. And then they'll start building their own tables and then there'll be more tables and then we'll have more shows. So that's the thing that I think has changed the most, even though in LA it hasn't quite been that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I talk a lot.
No, it's
you're saying good things.
Yeah, we didn't my stop goodness. On purpose.
Yeah.
We're like, sheesh, that's amazing. One of the things that you, it's not even in our notes, but I'm going rogue.
Do it.
Okay, go rogue. I'm going rogue. One of the things you mentioned that I think would be particularly of interest to the magic community right now is the thing you said about how if you reach out constantly and you're constantly trying to get people involved to create an environment of diversity, I love that the burlesque community is making that such a focus.
Well, we're female driven.
Yes.
Because so many shows now are put on by women who went, I want to do this, and they walk into a venue and don't know better. So they just literally walked in. I mean, I walked in and I was like, I want to do a show here. What do we do? Mm-hmm. Okay. And the first time I'm like, well, that didn't work well, but it worked well for them. And I got tanked on the ticket sales because they kept too much or they lied or whatever. And then it was like, oh, I'm going in with a contract on my terms and I'm going to say no if it doesn't fit my needs.
Yeah.
And so now we have more women that have been doing it longer. And because it is female driven, we have the tendency to go, how can we? Mm-hmm. I mean, at the Burlesque Hall of Fame, the first male was 11 years ago. Tigger was created, the first King of Boylesque.
Wow.
Up until that point, the men were separate from the women unless they were transgender or cross-dressers or transvestites performing.
Wow.
Which we have a lot of. We have a tremendous amount of legends that are transgender. It's amazing.
Oh, that's so cool.
You know, and at the time, I mean, my friend Satan's Angel told a story about being in the middle of the Midwest and they found out she was gay and they literally grabbed her, threw her out of the burlesque hall and threw her bag and hit her in the head as they were telling her to get the heck out of town.
Wow.
You know, and now it's like there are whole shows that are lesbians. You know, there are whole shows that are people of color. There are whole shows, Nerdlesque, you name it. There's a show out there for whatever it is that your personal preference is.
Oh, that's so cool.
Great. So you talk, we have in our notes, because you run a burlesque competition.
Yeah, I do.
And from what Krista was saying is that women and men are separate in the competition.
Oh,
yeah,
we're dealing with a lot of growing pains.
Yeah.
It first came up at the Burlesque Hall of Fame because they have a king and a queen, and it was like one of the female identifying performers was turned down from competing in that category. So he did perform in the Mr. dressed as a woman. Now we've actually had our first drag king win the title of Mr. Exotic World,
yay,
which is fabulous. And we're hoping that it's going to switch over the other way, which made me look at my festival, which I created in 2013, which is the Hollywood Burlesque Festival. And I created it like Old World Hollywood. We give away two titles locally that are Mr. and Ms. Hollywood Burlesque. And then we give away leading man and starlet for out of town. So we give away four titles, two local, two out, plus we do classic and, you know, some various subcategories. Well, as we're dealing more with transgender, we're dealing more with female or male identifying, non-binary, things like that, I've taken the last month interviewing people and carrying on one-on-one conversations in different communities to go, how can I make you feel more acceptable? Because I don't know that you want to compete for Miss or Mister. I can't really change the titles because I feel as though if I change midstream, we've kind of weirded things up. I mean, that's kind of how I look at it, is then the history is a little bit different. I've never said you had to have genitals that match a title. But now I'm going to be a little more out as far as saying, I don't care what your gender is. It's whether you identify or look female or male in the competition. Mm-hmm. If you win, you're more than welcome to go with Mix, MX, which is what a lot of people are dealing with when instead of, if they're non-binary, they don't identify as male or female. So I'm like, we can always use that title for you if you win. Mm-hmm. Technically, it will be that category, which is the one that you're in, but we can change it if you're the one that actually wins it. Because I still would like to give four titles away so that four people out there are representing Hollywood in a great art form. Having a title helps.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, when you've got a title, you get to walk into certain places ahead of other people. So for me, it's important to give those titles away.
Yeah.
So it's been interesting to deal with how to go, it's not male and female anymore, and reaching out and going, apply for either, it's okay.
Yeah, great.
Because we also have a showcase. So if you don't want to apply for the competition, we're not going to ask what it is. We also ask what your preferred pronouns are. Which is really important.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Do you think there would ever be a time where there isn't a male-female category and instead it's just one overall competition? Or do you find that male-female
visuals
are very different?
Okay. A lot do one overall. Here's why I didn't change it. Because we call ourselves queens. There's this big movement of queen, and we talk about the kings in our lives as well. There's a very strong movement for celebrating. I don't want to crash that to do this when we can be inclusive instead? If there were enough performers, I would happily have a non-denominal best of fest category for anyone that doesn't want to identify. Unfortunately, it's still a smaller piece that comes into the larger puzzle. So as of right now, the first step is the title will be MX if you want it, if that's right. What you want to go for.
I think that's a great,
it was the best compromise we could come up with. Yes. And who knows, 5 years from now?
Yeah.
It may change again, and we may go, we're just going to have one, and it's going to be MX, and then they can decide if they want to identify as Mr. Miss or if they just want to identify as, you know, Hollywood Burlesque Best of Fest. Right now, though, I'd still like to give as many awards out as possible, sure. Just making sure that people know that they're welcome.
I think the important thing about that I'm understanding from this is not that you made a unilateral decision. What I'm hearing is that instead of just going, okay, well, there's a problem, this is how we fix it, you asked people how they thought they should be
fixed.
Yeah,
isn't that amazing? Reach out to people. Other diverse voices. I know, that just, it's mind-boggling that sometimes men don't think about that.
Yeah, like, where did you even come up with the idea?
That's just, how? That's crazy girl talk, I think. Isn't it? You girls.
We're
you
rather
girls
emotional.
And your inclusiveness. I am rather emotional. Oh my God, take my rights away and I will scream. Yes. Pay me less than you pay the man and I will be very emotional. That emotion will be anger.
Yes.
Valid anger too.
It's so valuable because I think that right now I hear in our community both as entertainers, but specifically as magicians, there's this constant conversation of what do we do? And Kayla and I were discussing before about how so much of our listenership is male. And I think these are allies. These are people who are interested. But I think a lot of these are also people going, what do I do? What do I do? And so I really appreciated that perspective because you're saying, hey, what I did was I recognize that I don't have all the answers because this is not my perspective. So I'm going to bring in people who have that perspective and ask good questions and genuinely listen.
To me, that's the biggest thing is listening. I mean, I hate it when a male magician asks me what it's like to be a female magician. And then I give the answer and I'm like, it's really hard. Getting bookings are tough.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, no, I mean, being a female. And I'm like, well, it's a lot like what you do, only a little bit different. Because
mm-hmm.
I have boobs, I guess. That's what's different.
Yes.
Are there some challenges being a woman for some positions or some jobs or some? Absolutely. Are there some challenges for being a person of color or a lesbian or whatever at a certain venue? Absolutely. I mean, I've been booked in venues before where I show up and I walk in and I'm like, ha, this is not my crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you book me? And they'll be like, but you're so funny. They'll love you. And I'm like, this is going to be awful for me. It's going to be awful for them. And I'm going to go home and take a Silkwood shower. I'm not happy about this at all. Yeah. I emceed at a venue in Venice Beach right after a very male comedy show. And I walked up and I'm like, hey, and I told a couple jokes and the guy in the front row goes, boo.
Oh my goodness. Oh no.
And I'm literally like, I can fight this guy for the next 5 hours or I can make a joke about, I don't write my own material. Do you see these boobs? Mm-hmm. And I made that joke and the room laughed and I went, great, it's going to be boob jokes all night long. And then I get to go home and take my paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, okay, all right, I did a great job. I entertained the audience. I had a good time, but it just felt so icky, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
And the show wasn't icky. The people weren't icky. It was just they did not want to buy into it. Yeah. I've done shows down in Orange County, or as I like to call it, behind the red curtain. My tagline is the buxom, foul-mouthed godmother of L.A. burlesque, and you're going to put me in a room full of Republicans?
This is so great.
Oh, this is not good. Not good at all.
Oh, my goodness.
I tell jokes about being an accidental hooker.
Oh,
I'm
boy.
Like, this room is not my crowd. So instead, I tell a bunch of kids' jokes at a burlesque show and smile and laugh and introduce the girls and tell people to tip and make sure you love the world when you leave here because it's a crappy place out there so you can be the one that makes it better. You know, and that's how I end the show. And it's like, and then I drive home and I'm just like, oh they hate me because I'm a woman. And they literally did. I mean, I actually heard one person go, oh, it's a female host. I was like, no. Yeah, it is. Because you know what? I just don't know how to talk like other people do.
Yeah. I love, though, that you are like, no, I'm so comfortable in what I do and who I am that if I need to morph to fit you, I will.
It's not morphing to fit. Mm-hmm. Here's what it is. I was hired for a job.
Right.
When I show up for that job, my job is to, especially if I'm in a bar, sell liquor, sell tickets,
yep,
and make sure people come back so there's a show.
Yep.
I don't want to challenge my audience. I want to educate them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if exactly. I can come out and do a feminist speech and not have them realize I did a feminist speech, and by the end of the night, they go home and go, you know, I was really kind of nasty to the young girl in accounting. I should be a nicer person. Maybe I've helped change the world a little bit.
Yeah.
But I don't do a lot of shows that are in your face. I did one. I did a voting registration 6 years ago.
Oh, fun.
Oh.
And we did I Am the Lilacs. I Speak for the Vaginas.
Oh, my goodness.
And I dressed up as the Lilacs, and we did an act about body positivity. We did an act about rape. We did an act about, I mean,
wow.
You name it. We covered those topics. That's in an edge. And the whole time I'm reading a parody of the Lorax.
That's
and
amazing.
The last thing, and I'm standing on the little rock that says unless. And at the very end of it, I'm like, we're all going to lose our writing votes or we're all going to lose our rights if we don't vote.
Mm.
And that was the end of it. And I mean, it was wonderful. I had a male person come up and go, I didn't really understand the Rape Act because at the end of it, and I'm making him sound an idiot. He's
sure.
not.
Yeah.
he's really not. He's a good friend of mine.
That's
and he came
your
up to me and he's like,
voice.
Yes. It is. And he's like, I really don't understand why the flag was upside down. I mean, because that's a sign of distress. And, you know, that kind of stuff doesn't happen in the United States. And I looked at him and I go, aww. Do you know that there are 9 women in this show and every one of us have been raped? Some by family members, some at gunpoint, some date raped, some by their spouses, some roofied. And then when you're raped, you get to go through the whole process of reliving it mm-hmm. several times as you testify, as you sit in the emergency room, as you go back to prep to be. And then I'm like, it's pretty awful to go through the system if you report it. And that's why at the end of it, she actually escaped from a straitjacket,
oh, wow.
slit her wrists
oh,
and had
geez.
These beautiful flowing red ribbons come down and then wrapped herself in a I'm going to cry. And then, I mean, and it was powerful. She got a standing ovation for this act. And it was just one of the very few right in your face kind of things. And we talked about that it was right in your face. But we also did a voter registration and didn't tell you who to vote for. We simply
right.
talked about women's rights.
Right.
Because a couple of my friends are very Republican. And while I disagree with them on many topics, they're not terrible people.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them are scared.
Yeah, I think when you vilify other people just because they have different from opinions than you, then you immediately shut down the opportunity
yes,
to have a real meaningful
although
conversation.
Although some people do need to be vilified. There are actual Nazis walking the country right now screaming about it.
I don't think they need help being vilified.
Yeah, but I mean, there are certain people where it's
villains.
Okay to shut down. The emotional labor we do as performers with other performers or with partners or men or as women is real heavy. I mean, I've been raped. I've been sexually assaulted. I've had terrible experiences where I wasn't sure if I would live, as a lot of my friends have. And to sit and listen to Trump devalue women and listen to men say, I don't know how to help. I just kind of go, really? Really? Women you know are being raped and you just don't really know how to help. Okay.
Yeah.
That seems like a very scared thing to say. And when I look at men in magic, most of them want to help, I think.
Yes.
A lot of them are very stuck in their ways, and some of them are outright sexist.
Yeah.
The problem is the ones who want to help are gun-shy. And I can tell you that the emotional labor it takes to talk people through this sometimes is really hard. But at the same time, if not me, who?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that is my philosophy.
I think we said that in the very first episode. Like, yeah, we're totally with you. I think that's great.
So when men come up and ask questions, I simply say, how do you treat your wife? How do you treat your kids? Yeah. How do you treat, that's how you treat women. If you were to meet a young boy at the Magic Castle who was in the juniors group and he's working, you wouldn't think twice to go, hey, can I help you with that? Well, if it's a young woman, do the same thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But don't be creepy about it.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean,
don't be creepy.
Yeah, we're going to do a different episode at one point to share these stories, but we both have stories of being offered help and offered coaching and mentorship and come up to my room after the late night show.
Oh, honey, I'm in an open relationship and people know it. And I was at the castle one night talking about Boobdini and talking about how I was having trouble with this and that. And I had three different male magicians put their hand on my thigh and tell me if I ever need any help, they're more than happy to help me.
Lord.
And I just literally laugh in their face. And I'm like, just because I'm in an open relationship and I'm a burlesque dancer, you don't get to put your hand on my thigh. I don't know you.
It's not open call.
If you want to put your hand on my shoulder, I'm okay with that. Most women would not immediately pull away. If it's like, oh, excuse me, and you put your hand on your shoulder to get someone's focus and attention and say, I've seen you perform and you're amazing and I have thoughts on your act. Boy, I would love that.
Yeah.
But putting your hand on my thigh, are you insane?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The first time I encountered it, I was 13. So it's like,
I grew up on construction sites.
Yeah, so you totally get it. Yeah. And it's like, talking about like the magic community, which is supposed to be this wonderfully accepting community of all weird people. And then this, all of this happens when you, you know, it's terrible.
This is an ongoing
I'm going to give the best piece of advice to any man who's listening to this podcast. If you want to help women in magic, treat them like people. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
Treat them like people.
Yes.
Nah.
It's not. Really, are we beat poets? I love this.
Yeah, no,
it's
because slapping.
Yes. Yes.
So crazy.
Breaks the sound.
Do you know what really helped me? I was sitting at Misty Lee's show, and I was talking with two of my male magician friends, and I was like, I really want to get a Mercury fold down because I want to impress the magicians because I'm really tired of this, and I'm just... And he looks at me and he goes, why do you want to impress magicians?
Yeah.
And he just kind of went... Yeah, you're right. Why do I want to impress magicians? I don't care if they can figure out how I can do it. I'm performing for the audiences.
Yeah.
And you know what? They will be impressed.
Absolutely.
Because I'm working really hard at my craft, and if they aren't impressed, they're jealous. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
Yep. Also, I'll teach you a really cool version of a Mercury fold.
Oh, I already solved my whole problem.
Good. Brilliant.
I solved my problem in a way. I had a male magician friend of me literally, I don't want to give away something because we're not on the private side, but literally when he did it, I just went, you're kidding me. That's how you do that? And he goes, it's exactly how I do it. And I went, thank you. Gave him a big... Well, I said, can I give you a hug? And then I gave him a big hug.
Yeah, very nice.
I am a huge advocate of, may I give you a hug?
Always.
I'm a hugger.
Yeah.
And when people are kind of apprehensive, I'm like, you don't have to hug me. It's okay. You know, someday I hope that we're comfortable enough that you feel like a sister and we're family, but, you know, and I'll extend my hand and that's fine.
Yes.
And I love it when men say that to me. I now have trained several of the men at the castle that when they come up to see me, they just put their arms out.
Yep. Yeah.
And I'm like, yep.
Yeah, you know? Coming in.
Yeah. Jack Goldfinger does that.
Oh, I love that.
May I? Love it.
If any of you want to know how to treat women, spend 5 minutes with Jack.
Oh,
Jack
Goldfinger. Yes.
Absolutely. I feel very, one, I never, ever, ever feel like Jack is asking me questions or anything from a perspective of like, because you're a lady.
Yeah. No.
And I don't even know how you achieve that, but I just feel so respected. But part of it is all the little things, all the like, he holds his hands open when he wants to give you a hug and says, may I? And waits. And he does, and I don't know if you've even noticed this, he won't even come towards you.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. He's just frozen in space. Yep. There's a lot, and it's all of those little subtle choices that communicate to us, okay, I feel respected and taken care of, and I love it here.
There was an interesting post in another magic form talking about using tampons in a magic act, because there's a magician in town who does. And
my answer to that is it's a household item for 50% of the population. And if you're offended by it, it's probably because you grew up in a time where men didn't talk about sanitary napkins. Women went to the store and bought that, and they bought them for their daughters, and the tradition was that. You know, I'm at the point right now in my life where I'm 52, and I'm like, Eddie, I just got my period. And he's like, all right, I'll run get you what you need. Do you need the big ones or the skinny little ones? What do you need? You know? And it's like, this is what I need. Thanks. You know, and half the time I just take a picture of it online and text it to him. He buys it and I'm done.
Yeah.
You know, but there's a lot of generations where it's awkward to see that for the first time. And my response to that is, a tampon makes a lot more sense than linking rings from China to me.
Yeah.
you know? Yeah, Cannibal and I were talking about that one day, and he was just like, why do we have rings? Where did they come from? What is it, you know? And it's like, pulling a tampon out of a purse to finish off a magic act, that makes perfect sense to 50% of the people in the room, and the other 50% may feel uncomfortable, but welcome to card to fly for us for 20 years.
Right, exactly. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
By the way, I do card to vagina.
As you should.
This is, again, a conversation about context, about context environment. Is yes. Context yes. is everything.
I would argue that, like, there's a place and time for the tampon act, and it might not be the castle, or it might not be a corporate event,
I don't think that that would be weird for the castle.
Yeah,
I think it would be breakthrough if we started having acts like that at the castle. But it's not offensive.
No.
It's awkward to see a tampon. But when you open it up and there's a card in it, it's like, that's fantastic. How did that get there?
I remember, so I went to Magic Camp, and so this was in 2004.
Thanks,
very much. My friend Zoe did an act where she pulled out a tampon as a magic wand and did nothing with it but wave it over a roll of toilet paper that then was empty and then refilled and put it right back in her bag.
Ooh.
And it was it was a lovely act about going back to school and everything. And she pulled out this tampon, did the thing, great. And the counselors erupted. They were mortified that she would do
that. How old were the students?
It's 11 to 21. So, and a lot of, some of the kids freaked out. Some of the boys freaked out.
Of course they did. Because they're still taken into another room while we're explained that we're terrible because we bleed once a month.
Correct. Yeah. But I think, like, and then back then, I will always remember that there was a counselor that really stood up for her and that decision, saying, this is not taboo. This is not terrible.
Yeah.
You have, like, you're at Magic Camp. You know your audience. Nobody here is going to care about this. I would say if it were me, I personally would choose not to do a tampon act in the early, early close-up slot at the Magic Castle when most of your audience is going to be uncomfortable, right?
Yeah.
So it is sort of a know-your-audience situation. Do I think that it's any less terrible than pulling out toilet paper? Gosh, no. I would love if everybody was comfortable.
Yeah.
But I think it is sort of, in a way, just understanding what your audience's expectations are.
Part of being someone who's been around a long time.
Yeah.
Those breakdowns happen really fast.
Yeah.
I mean, when you think about George Carlin and the Seven Dirty Words.
Oh, okay. Great. Yes.
When I started doing radio, it was in 19... What year did I start doing radio? Oh, my God. I was between husbands at the time. Things were changing.
I feel like you became Mae West when you thought, 98. I was between husbands.
1998.
Okay.
So the Seven Dirty Words had already gone to court. Lenny Bruce had been arrested how many times to talk about dirty words. I had to take an air name, and I didn't want to use my real name because I don't really care for where I came from, most of the people that were there, and my family.
Mm.
And I was like, I don't want to be on radio and all of a sudden get phone calls from my high school, you know, especially because we're national. Someone may recognize my voice, that's fine. So I chose to use the name Lily von Stupp. Stupp means something. You can look that up in a urban dictionary or a Yiddish book, and you can find out what it means. I'm not going to say it in front of the kids. Okay, it's making love. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. That seems like such a nice thing for two people to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I chose it specifically because at the time, they had just fined a Spanish radio station for saying merde.
Oh, wow.
Oh, what?
For swearing on the radio. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do that, and then I'm going to legally change my name. Because going to conventions and having two names is a pain in the butt.
Mm.
So I legally changed my names, and I'm like, you know, if I ever get fined or they try to find me, it's my name. Mm-hmm. Good luck with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so that was an act of rebellion, and now it's legally in my name. So the reality is, we went from a time where you couldn't say that on the air to Hill Street Blues having the first male butt to now, you know.
Anything, yeah.
Anything goes almost on primetime television still. Yeah. So times will change. But in 4 years, a magic tampon wand is going to be a staple in how many magic shows. And will it be great? Will it be silly? Will it be ever? I don't know. It depends on how they use it.
Yeah.
You know? Absolutely. I mean, that's really how it comes down is how are you using it? Is it entertaining? Does it move your act forward? And if it does, do it.
Yep.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah, I think it's great. I like the routine that we're talking about.
Yeah.
Where the object to impossible location. Yeah. I think it's really smart, and I can't wait to see it actually booked at the castle, because I think it'll be really important.
I think it's fantastic because 50% of the audience who have never really felt when it comes to that kind of thing now goes, wow, I'm represented on that stage and something that used to be taboo and shouldn't be, because it's a fact of life and we all do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Hopefully I won't be doing it much longer. I'm 52.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm really hoping the last one was the last one. Every month it's like, yes.
Yeah, we're so close.
I used to get really angry when magicians would come on stage and use the line of, you know, of course I'm a magician and I'm single and I did this because I have no skills with women. Okay. Let's look at that from a psychological perspective. You've walked out and told everyone you're a loser. Are you going to win the audience back from that? Or are you just looking for a sympathy date after the show?
Mm-hmm.
And I use date probably incorrectly. but that's the mentality of developing a strong act that works well for all people is developing a strong act that is attractive to all people. While some jokes will hit harder with male or hit harder with female or might work better into a POC culture or a lesbian culture or a transgender culture, at the same time, if you don't pull an entire group of people to see if your magic is working, you're not really creating an act. You're just doing some tricks you bought in a store.
Yeah.
So developing an act and developing a way of connecting to an audience, it's best if you can connect to everyone. When I watch Eddie or Hannibal, when I watch, oh God, there's so many good magicians that I can name. You know, Sean McMaster, I'm trying to think of some other, Pop Hayden. Mm. They can read a room and decide, do I go with the dirty innuendo or do I leave the dirty innuendo out based on this audience? Do I go ahead and pull the joke in about, you know, women's rights, or do I leave that joke out? And that's the important thing. Mm-hmm. When I'm developing an act, I've got 3 outs for everything for the magic trick. I also have 3 outs if the audience isn't buying the act.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you develop a good act in magic. And a lot of people aren't doing that. They're doing tricks and hoping to get phone numbers. And I don't mean to be derogatory towards all men. Of course, I don't have to say it, but it's not all of you. And some of you that sit back and go, how can I help? Get involved. Mm-hmm. Make friends with female magicians. Invite them over with the group that you do on a Thursday night for magic tricks. Encourage them. Recommend books. I love it. Not when someone comes up to me right after I perform. Never critique them then. But if you come up and say to me, I have some thoughts on your act, if you're open to it, I will gladly give you my card and say, send them to me.
Mm-hmm.
I respect you as a magician. Hopefully, if I respect them as a magician, and getting feedback is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
If you come up to me after the show and you're like, hey, baby, that was pretty good, but you know what you should do? If you go to page 367 in Tarbell. Oh, yes, you own Tarbell. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, those thinly veiled attempts at being like, I know a thing. Did you know I know a thing? That is, well, we're about to do a critique episode. And one of the things I love about critique is it's like, hi, this is about you. Your critique was a very thinly veiled attempt to let me know all the things you know. Yeah, I noticed. You know, my job is to read people for a living, right? You're bad at this. Stop it.
Quoting sources and bragging are two different things.
It's unbelievable.
Quoting
it's
sources unbelievable. And bragging are two different things, guys.
Yeah.
I love quotes. I love information. I love references to books because I'm a reader. Now I do a lot more audiobooks than reading books because I lost an eye. But, you know, in the burlesque world, we deal with nudity at all times. People think we have orgies backstage and pillow fights. And we all just sit around and admire each other's bodies and then wine flows and angels sing. I don't know. The reality is I show up in sweatpants with my makeup half done and my hair up and I'm rushing to get a costume change to get out. And I'm making sure, because I also produce, I'm making sure that everybody got seated. In reality, it isn't until I'm getting ready to perform, if I'm stripping, that I even actually start thinking about sexuality. And at that point, I'm thinking about how do I just go out there and punch these people and and affect them in whatever way it is that I'm trying to do that. Mm-hmm. I don't date burlesque dancers. I'm a bisexual in an open relationship. I write checks. I don't date my employees. I feel the same way about magic. I fell in love with Eddie before I even realized I was in love, and I was just like, oh no, I'm dating an entertainer again. Darn it. But at the same time, luckily, we work well together, which is fantastic. But if I were a male magician, I would not be going through the pool of magicians to try to find a girlfriend. I also wouldn't be working the phone lines in radio. I also wouldn't be working the audience as a magician. I mean, when I'm at the castle, the last thing I'm thinking about is who am I going to hook up with?
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's what I want to do for a living. I want to hang out and learn and be, you know. And so there's that mentality of if you take the thought of having sex with someone away, it's amazing how you can treat them as a human and encourage females to work in this art form. Stop looking at me as a female. Look at me as a human.
Yep. That's so good.
Yeah.
Oh, it's thank so you. Good.
I'm so happy right now. I mean, you can't see it because it's a podcast, but over the course of so far an hour, I have pumped my fist in the air, yes. I think, six times.
Have we been talking an hour? I'll stop now.
No. Absolutely. You will not be silenced.
No.
So we have a couple more questions for you if you're interested.
I'll give you as much time as you need. Fantastic. I don't have to leave until 9 in the morning.
Perfect.
Plenty of time.
We should definitely let her sleep.
Sleep till Brooklyn, kids.
So but we open every single episode of the She's podcast with the idea that we would like to be obsolete. And that is actually, I don't think we've ever really talked about on the podcast why we decided to do that. And it's really tongue in cheek. But the idea is that we shouldn't need this podcast. We shouldn't need it. We do need it. We need it very badly. But we shouldn't. If there was real gender equality, then a podcast about feminism in the magic world would not be necessary. So every single episode is a goal to move the needle a tiny bit towards real, true change. And we would be curious, as we do love to ask our guests, what you think would need to happen to make this podcast obsolete.
People would have to stop being people. Rape isn't about sex. Misogyny isn't really about sex. It's all about power. And humans crave recognition. They have egos. They need to constantly feel better about themselves. I don't know how we would get an entire world to get rid of the tall poppy syndrome. Mm-hmm. I don't know how that's possible. But what I do know is possible is if we constantly shed light on the subject and we constantly talk about it, things get better. I don't know that at the end of civilization, when they write the last page and they close the book because we're all dead because we've probably ruined the planet, if they'll go, hey, we ruined the planet, but at least we were all nice to each other. I don't know that that would be the final thing. I don't know that this podcast will ever be obsolete because there will always be people who want to have wars. There will always be people who are jealous and petty and sad and broken. I try to hopefully leave a place when I'm there better than when I came. When I go to the beach, I take my garbage with me. When I go out with people, I leave my garbage at home. And I hope that their life is better because I'm in it. And I hope that my life is better because they're in it. And when I see someone who's wounded or broken, I reach out. When I have power, I reach down to pull up. And when I don't have power, I ask for help. And I think that's really the only thing that's ever going to make the world a great place. And again, I'm not perfect. I've done terrible things. We all have. We're all a monster in somebody's stories. My first ex-husband says terrible things about me. And guess what? He's allowed to. He is. I hurt him, you know, and I'm the monster in his story, even though that was not my intent. Impact intent. I'm sure you all know about that as well. So I don't know how to be obsolete. I mean, I think Justice Ginsburg was asked, God, how many women is the right amount on the Supreme Court? And she said 9. And they're like, that's crazy. All of them. And she goes, there's been 9 men for how long? And no one thought that was weird. So I don't know. I mean, I believe we have the capacity to change this. I just don't know if we have the want. Mm-hmm. You know, one of my inspirations is Gloria Steinem. Yeah. Again, white chick. Problematic, but at the time, you know, when the suffragettes were out there, yes, they were terrible to people of color, but it was one step at a time to get there, and we eventually got there. Yep. Intersectionality between feminism, color, sexuality, race, all of that is really important. But at the same time, if you don't show up, nothing changes. Mm-hmm. And I thank the legends of burlesque that beat the path down before me that I walk on. And I thank the feminists that were there before me. And I thank the men feminists that were there by their sides as well. But Gloria Steinem has a quote, and I'm going to pull it up because I absolutely love it. It's one of my favorites. At an elder age, she was asked, you know, what are you going to do now? And she basically said, at my age, in this still hierarchical time, people often ask me if I'm passing the torch. I explain, I'm keeping my torch, thank you very much, and I'm using it to light the torches of other. Because if each of us has a torch, there will be enough light.
Yeah.
And that is literally my philosophy on life. I work a lot with women to try to help them to get further along in where they are. Because again, I mean, man, I had a crappy childhood, not as crappy as others. I've gone through a lot of crap because we all have. But when you do the work, it gets better. And when you do the work, it gets better. Mm-hmm. And when it gets better, you want to do the work with other people to help them get better too. So to me, that's what this podcast is. It's the start of how do we get more women in? How do we do? And again, there's a lot of amazing women in magic when you think about it. We have a history of incredible women in magic. Mm-hmm. There just isn't enough. And a lot of it is access. And a lot of it is that hand that comes at you when you go towards it from the male hierarchy that is there. So if we can get rid of the hand or at least make the access better, I think that's how it changes.
That's amazing. That's great. Such a good answer.
So good.
Oh my God.
Thank you. Do I get an A+? Do I get a cookie?
We should have brought a feminist cookie.
Do I get feminist cookies? It's exhausting being a feminist.
You'll get a feminist cookie.
Here's the thing.
You're just going to wait till the very end of that.
Life is exhausting.
Yeah.
It's how you choose to navigate it, where you can go, I can row with the current sometimes and sit back. And other times I just have to keep pushing.
What do you think most people don't know about feminism or about gender equality that they should?
That it's a human right. That's it. I mean, I'm an atheist, okay? I studied Catholicism as a child. My first husband was a Buddhist. I hung out with monks. I mean, yeah. I'm like, I have a bunch of Buddhist monks in my house right now. Okay. My second husband was Jewish by birth. He was not practicing, but his ex-wife and 2 children were. So I spent many a night discussing Esther. His mom, or their mom, I mean, I talked with her and I'm like, look, these aren't my kids. They're your kids. I'm their extra mom. I'm not their mom. That's it. I'm an atheist, but if you want them raised this way, I will do enough to raise them until they're 18 and then they get to make their decision if something happens to you. But I will do that because you're their mom and that's okay. And you get to make that decision. That's a respect thing. And if we respect other people's rights and realize that just because she wants her kid raised Jewish doesn't mean I have to believe in anything in the Jewish faith. I can still learn about it and find it fascinating. But the golden rule of almost every religion is the same thing. Yeah. Be kind. Do unto others.
I think that's great.
What do you think is your most proud contribution to magic or feminism? Or both?
I think doing burlesque is my biggest contribution. Mm. Doing magic in burlesque allows women to realize it doesn't always have to be about their body. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important. I think that it's a skill that brings people together in a different way. Magic is an art form that just, I mean, it's amazing. My ex-husband's daughter was 6. And he would pull a quarter out of her ear all the time. And she begged him to explain how it worked. And he's like, if I tell you this, it's not going to be magic anymore. And I said to him, you can't. Mm. You can't do this, because if you do this, it's going to break her illusion on life and her dad's no longer going to be magic. He taught her how to do a French drop and she cried for 3 days.
Oh, no.
There is something about this that gives hope and excitement and joy in ways that are great, unless you're a mentalist and you're ripping people off as a fake psychic.
Yeah. Then no.
As a fake psychic.
Then bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the idea of magic for good and the impact and the joy that it can have on somebody's life is so powerful. And to me, I love the fact that I'm out there in a group full of women who are finding their voice and finding their body and finding their sexuality and finding their space in the world, whether they weigh 10 pounds, 500, no matter what they look like, they're valid and valued. Mm. And when I show them another art form, to me, it exposes them to things that they didn't get exposed to. And I think that's something I'm really proud of, because I am a role model in a way that they don't normally get to see, because a lot of the magicians that do magic shows can be real hacks. Luckily at Monday Night Tees, I had the best. I had Pop. I had Oropo. Yeah. I had, you know, John Armstrong. I mean, I had the best in magic because I have access to them here in LA, and they would come do my show on a Monday night. Not everybody has that access. The privilege that I had for 10 and a half years in LA was having a space for people to create art, and when I shut that down, it was heartbreaking. Mm. So that 10 years of showing women that if they wanted to do this, they could, taking the cast to the Magic Castle on a Tuesday night after the Monday night show, all dressed up and beautiful, and, you know, seeing this way, it's fantastic. So I think I've exposed a lot of people to a side of magic they hadn't even thought about or thought about doing. In fact, I took anaphylaxis to the Magic Castle. She saw a quick change act, went back to the UK, studied with people, learned a little bit of magic, took her act to the Burlesque Hall of Fame with a magic act, and ended up getting first runner-up with it.
Oh, wow.
And it happened specifically because I took her to the castle.
That's great. What do you think is a great piece of advice for women who are getting into magic to know?
The only thing that will stop you is you. When someone says no to me or puts up a wall, I will figure out how to go around it, over, or through it if it's something I really want to do. So if you find magic to be your passion, find your path. If that means you have to go to the local magic club and you have to deal with a little bit of sexism and a little bit of crap, sometimes you just got to smile for a couple minutes and then blow past them. You know, it's not like smile and be pretty and be like, but it's like I can sit there and go, haha, you're kind of sexist, aren't you? That's adorable. All right, show me how to do that again. Okay, thank you. I'm moving on. Mm-hmm. It's like dating. To look for a mentor or someone, you're going to have to kiss a lot of frogs to find a prince. So hire a couple different magicians. Take an hour with each of them and find the one that has the style you want. When I talk to my burlesque students, I'm like, find the women that represent how you feel about yourself. Watch every YouTube video they have. Study why they do what they do. And then you can go from there. Magic is the same way. Mm-hmm. Whether you want to do classic card tricks or you want to do something new, like impossible with a tampon, you know, find the thing that speaks to you and do it, because that's where innovation comes from. That's where passion comes from. That's where happiness comes from. And if you do magic for 2 years, if you do it professionally, if you do it as a hobby, if you enjoy it and love it, keep doing it. And don't let anybody tell you you can't.
Oh,
I'm doing it, man.
I love it. Okay, rapid fire question time. Okay, rapid fire. All right, you ready? What is your favorite magic resource? Or burlesque?
Or performance resource.
Yes, performance resource.
Favorite resource?
People.
Great.
Ooh.
What is
They're so good.
These are very good answers.
Damn it. What is your favorite routine that you've ever seen, magic or otherwise?
My favorite routine that I've ever seen. Wow, you're asking. That's
correct.
It's a hard one.
That's really tough.
The one that sticks with you that you're like, that's the one.
Oh, man.
You can say more than one.
Mm. Okay.
If that helps.
I'm gonna choose this one, and not just because he's in the room.
Bowie?
Stay here. Don't leave, because I want you to hear this. I want you to hear this. So there's a lot of great magic out there. There's a lot of great burlesque out there. There's a lot of things that are wonderful. I love combined arts. I love things that turn left. You know, I like, what's his name? What's the Stephen Wright. I love Emo Phillips. I love people who you expect them to do something and they do something else. The first time I saw Rob do his Houdini escape act, I lost my mind. Mm-hmm. I laughed so hard, it hurt. He literally comes out with balloons, ties himself to a chair and escapes. It is the most absurd thing ever. But it literally follows the art form of escape. It follows the art form of balloons, and it follows the art form of total stupidity and absurdness. And for me, it's one that will stick with you forever. Rob, is it online?
No.
No, I've seen it live. Okay. I can attest.
Are you going to put it online?
Yeah.
You probably should.
Okay, we'll try to get it up so that by the time this airs, you can search Rob the Balloon Guy, Chair Escape.
And we'll
be on Champions of Magic, hopefully.
He'll be on Champions of Magic, and he'll be on Penn & Teller Fool Us.
Yeah. All right. I actually saw Rob do, that's actually the first routine I ever saw Rob do at your show, Lily. I saw it at Monday Night Tease, my third time ever visiting L.A., I got to see you do the chair escape, and it was, I was sitting with
Dave Cox
and his wife, his amazing wife, Stephanie. So cool. That was like actually the first time I ever met Stephanie, lifelong friends. And we were talking until Rob came on, and then Rob came on, and I think booze went through my nose. It was so funny.
It's funny. It's charming. It's silly. And his particular stage presence is...
I'm right here.
Adorable. It's adorable.
It's very good.
Now, I'm going to tell you, it's a tie, because there's another act that is not in this room by a lovely woman named Lindsay Benner. Lindsay Benner does an entire act that has three chapters to it where she is a psychopath and she finds love with one of the audience members, where she does balancing, juggling, magic, and it's one of the most charming, beautiful pieces I've ever seen.
I absolutely agree.
I'm not a big fan of, here's a great magic trick. I'm a huge fan of, here's a great story or an absurdness. Mm-hmm. So those are two that just really stick with me strong. I could tell you there's a million magician acts I love. I love Penn & Teller. I love Amazing Jonathan. I love people who go, here's magic, I don't take myself seriously, and it's fantastic. At the same time, I love a great dove act, because I think it's absolutely amazing that you can do that. I love animals. I think it's fantastic. It's hard, but concept of specific act, those are two that I just think really, if you break down how they were put together, why they were made, you just kind of go, genius.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's great.
And I went with contemporary, because there's other stuff, but I think contemporary, these are two that you should be able to find and research as well.
Yeah, great. Who was the first woman you ever saw do magic?
And it doesn't have to be live.
Honestly, I couldn't tell you. I only because I've watched variety shows from the time I was teething. Mm. I grew up watching Hee Haw, and I grew up watching the Grand Old Opry. I grew up watching Johnny Carson. I would sneak out and watch David Letterman. I watched Sonny and Cher. So there are a million of them, and it's amazing to me whenever I would be like, oh, I saw her. I can tell you the one that had the most impact on me.
Yeah, that'd be great. I was going to ask, like, who do you remember the most?
Dusty Summers, and it was an act that happened recently. I saw her in, like, 2006 do her magic act, and she literally was... She was topless in a corset and made a bunch of doves appear.
Yeah.
And I sat there and just went, that is one of the most beautiful, powerful, amazing things I've ever seen.
Is she the woman? Okay, so I responded being like, yes, I know it. And then I might not actually know exactly who she is. Is she the one? She comes out in like a kind of a sheer cape of sorts.
She has a sheer cape.
And then all of a sudden it's like, and birds. And you're like,
and birds. Oh my God. Yes. Yes.
It's who you it is who I think it is.
She was the first naked magician. She has a wonderful biography out there. She's a dear friend of mine now, which is absolutely amazing. I still sometimes just pinch myself when I'm like, I know these people. Holy cow. Yeah. Dusty wrote the column for Las Vegas Weekly, I think it was, for, I don't know, 10 years. She had her own show in Vegas. Amazing. And again, there are many other women that I saw before then. I may not be able to name them all because I remember sitting there as a kid watching TV and watching magic acts and watching. I mean, I remember watching the Wilsons, you know. It's amazing when you think about that. And I'm like, holy cow, I now know them, too. How did this happen? Yeah. You know, I'm very fortunate that I came to Los Angeles finally, you know.
Yeah. Are there any women in magic that you think people should absolutely be checking out?
Maybe name one.
Or one, yeah.
I'm sitting across from two of them. Okay.
We're being bashful.
Oh, gosh.
If I'm not going to count the two people who are in the room,
yeah, people already know us.
I just had the pleasure of working with Simone Turkington. I was delighted by her act. It was very cute. It was written well. It was executed well. And I was just like, that's fantastic. And she's performing all over Los Angeles right now. So there's one you can go to right there. There's also the Women in Vaudeville show that Lindsay does. And often brings amazing people in there as well. So, I mean, as far as straight magic goes, there's two right there. Three right there. Yeah, four right there.
Woohoo! I love it. Okay. Now, this is maybe the most important question.
So we're
in the entire podcast.
I don't wear panties. It's not boxers or briefs.
Good to know. Okay. Thank you so much.
And it's for being on our podcast. Okay. Most important question.
All right. Imagine you're at the Magic Castle. Mm-hmm. Okay. A guy comes up to you. He grabs your hand very gingerly, but maybe a little bit romantically, flirtatiously.
Flirtatious.
And he asks you to go for a meal. And assuming that you know this man, he's your friend, and holding your hand is in no way threatening and you consent to it, would you go to In-N-Out Burger, the Counter Burger, or Steak and Shake?
Where would you go? Where would you go?
Steak and Shake.
Brilliant.
It's a brilliant answer. Yeah.
Not actually because it's the best food, but because it holds the most memories. In-N-Out is good, but Steak and Shake was my childhood growing up. So that was the place that we would go. And thin fries and a chocolate shake now would kill me. Mm. But, oh, my God, I would love it.
Yeah, I'd love
that. I love their fries.
I don't think there's between the three of us, I don't think there's one of us that could have a chocolate shake and not have some kind of reaction.
Totally.
You got an EpiPen, too? Oh. Sometimes I sign autographs with it. I'm a terrible comic. I actually have stopped at the South Point to go to the Steak and Shake on the way into Las Vegas.
That's really great.
And then, you know, you go and you pull, you go in and you wait an extra 30 minutes because the line is so long at Steak and Shake.
That's great.
Yeah.
Because I'm Canadian, so I only experienced Steak and Shake a few years ago. Mm. And I remember exactly when I was hanging out with Joe Diamond. We were on the way to record an episode for his radio show. And on the way, I said, I'm feeling a little bit, you know, lethargic. Is there any way we can go get a smoothie? Like, I just want something green. And he goes, no problem. We swing into a Steak and Shake and he goes, two birthday cake milkshakes, please.
It
was very green. And all I could think is this what Americans think smoothies are?
Yes.
Please explain to me later. No, it was just that particular. But it was so good.
That's
and
really great.
That episode, it's the first episode I ever did with Joe Diamond on his radio show. And it's really funny because we're both just hyped up on sugar. Oh, it's delicious.
Great.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Do I get to do a closing thought?
Of course you do. Absolutely. Yes. We're gonna say thank you, and then we're going to give you a feminist cookie, and then we're going to give you a chance to say your last thing.
Okay.
You get the last word.
Okay.
Are you ready? You want to say thank you? No?
Are we giving a feminist cookie?
Yeah, of course we are. Of course we're giving. Are we just not?
Yeah.
I think of course we are.
I don't know, but if the feminist cookies are the same cookies you gave the dog, I don't think I want one.
Oh, okay. It's a metaphorical. Yes,
it's a metaphorical very made with love, and that's it, cookie.
Yeah, it's made of love.
But we're giving you one.
Yay! Feminist cookie! Queer Cookie is for all of the contribution you have made to the entertainment community and the magic community over the course of your career. Yay. We're so grateful that you did this. It means a lot. And for me, on a personal level, the conversations we've had over the last year? How long have we been talking about feminism?
Quite a while.
Quite a while. And for me,
Since I was 14.
Like, I mean, this was really not part of my thinking process until, you know, relatively recently when I went on the tour with John Reed and started speaking to you. And so I'm very, very grateful to have you in my life and on this podcast. Aww, and we want to really thank you for doing this.
It was great. And
yes, it was super great. So we're going to give you a feminist cookie and a huge thank you. And is there anything else you'd like to say before we go?
Yes. Yes.
Is it just yes?
No. No. In order to move forward, you really do have to look at the past. So whenever given the opportunity, when there is someone in the room that is older than you, take a few minutes to talk with them. Because they've experienced a life that you didn't. You know, when you were born, abortion was legal. Mm-hmm. When my grandmother was, she couldn't get a divorce. Mm-hmm. So when you look at where the people were before you, it puts perspective to where we are now, and it gives direction to where we're going in the future. So elderly people may be annoying sometimes. Elderly people may be all of those things, but they have forgotten more than you and I know about subjects a lot of time. Some of them are doddering old fools. I'm not going to lie. It happens. But for the most part, you have to look at the past to look forward. So anytime you can spend time with people who are older and know more than you do, please do.